Nathan's been my friend for years. He's a good mate. When we were 13, we used to play football together on a Saturday. At one stage, he was the team's top goal scorer, while I was the one being moaned at for letting the opposition run straight past me. Nathan's dad died when he was only little, maybe 4 or 5. My mum told me he died in a pretty horrific accident, but Nathan never mentions it. To be honest, I'm not even sure he knows what happened, and it's not my place to bring it up. Nathan lives with his mum and stepdad. Steve has lived with them since Nathan was 14. He's one of those people who comes across as friendly and outgoing, and he's always been fine with me, but Nathan says he's moody and drinks too much. Last year, Nathan's mum was taken to hospital after falling down the stairs, but Nathan never went to visit her. I know that because he spent most of that period sleeping on our sofa until my mum said he needed to go home. Since then, I haven't seen much of him, but I know he regularly sleeps at other people's houses. He was dropped from the football team for losing his fitness and missing too many practice sessions. One night, his mum banged on our door demanding to know where he was, but I could honestly say I didn't know. My mum was just cross because, and I quote, "I shouldn't be encouraging drunkards to the house." I feel sorry for him and always try and say hello when I see him at school.
Mina's story. A letter from Detective Superintendent Victoria Lockwood to the parents of Aisha Hasbani. Dear parents of Aisha Hasbani, I am a detective officer investigating the recent disappearance of a 15-year-old student, Mina Begum, who attended Southwood Academy in Coventry. I understand that your daughter may have known Mina as a friend. It's my role to understand Mina better and the reasons she has decided to leave the country. Importantly, I'm trying to gather any information that may help to find her and reunite her with her family. This will help the police and other agencies to prevent other vulnerable teenagers from disappearing. For this reason, I seek your permission to speak to your daughter at a place where she feels most comfortable and with a nominated adult present. This could be at home or at school and with a family member or friend, providing that he or she is over 18 years old. I can arrange an interpreter for your daughter should this be necessary. I would like to take a handwritten statement from your daughter that will not take any longer than 2 hours, and this would cover Mina, her religious beliefs, lifestyle, and the circumstances just before Mina left the UK. Please be assured that I am not investigating your daughter and she is not under any suspicion. I am simply asking for her help. With the school's permission, I have started to introduce myself to your daughter and have explained why I need her help. I would be grateful if you could consider allowing your daughter to give me a statement. It is unlikely that the statement will be required for any other purposes, e.g. court, and is simply necessary to provide the police with some background information concerning Mina, in the hope we can find her and bring her home. I am, of course, more than happy to meet with you personally if that will help. Otherwise, please reply to me by email or call the number above. I can call you back if you prefer. Yours sincerely, Detective Superintendent Victoria Lockwood.
Mark is my younger brother. My mum and dad adopted him when he was 3 years old. We've always known we were both adopted and it was never hidden from us, but Mark struggled with it more than I did. When we were little, he had some contact with his birth parents. They'd pick him up at the weekends and take him to the park, and we were always guests at his birthday parties. I never received any gifts from my birth parents, but Mark got cards and presents on a regular basis. He always did seem annoyed that they sent him the wrong clothes or toys he considered himself too old to play with. I would have just been grateful for some sort of acknowledgement. After Mark's 14th birthday, he refused to let them visit anymore. He said he didn't need two families and that they were the cause of his problem. It was around the same time that he started hanging around town and wearing one of those silly top knots. He said it was part of his new identity. I always told him it looked ridiculous. The older girls he hung around with didn't seem to mind, though. He tried to hide the love bites on his neck, but I could always see them underneath his collar. After all, he couldn't always wear his hood up to keep that daft hairstyle away. We found out that Mark had actually gotten a girl pregnant 4 weeks before he ran away. She appeared at the house one night, sobbing on the doorstep with a huge belly sticking out from underneath her jumper. Mum and Dad were horrified, but managed to hold it together long enough to invite her in for tea. Mark, however, refused to let her through the door, stating that he would deal with it. I watched from my bedroom window as he steered her away from the house. She didn't look like the girl he'd been dating, though. A month later, he was gone. He packed his bags one night while Mum and Dad were celebrating their anniversary, and he'd left a scribbled note on the table. He said that his boys were going to take care of him and that the gang were all the family that he needed. He wrote that he wanted to make sure his child had a proper father. Mum and Dad went out of their minds. They called the police, went to school and spent their time visiting homeless shelters, but they never did find him. Given the size of the girl's bump, I'm guessing that baby must be around 6 months old by now. That makes me an uncle. Well, an adoptive uncle anyway.
Hi, I'm Ali. I'm 17 and at the moment I live with my mate Tabs. We're in a band called Calamity Soul and Tabs is the lead singer and I'm the guitarist. We've been playing together for almost about a year now. Our music is a mixture of soul and pop. I compose the melodies and Tabs writes the lyrics. He's a real poet and some of his ideas are, well, beautiful. I don't consider myself to be a runaway. I didn't leave home in the middle of the night after a fight with my parents. And I don't wander the street or sleep on park benches. When I left, I had given it a lot of thought. I talked about it with my friends and the counsellor at school, and just decided it was the best thing to do. Please don't think badly of my family. It wasn't their fault. They'd always given me everything I wanted and had high hopes for me. They paid for private education in the hope that I would train to be a doctor, and talked open about the plans for my wedding celebration and the desire to have grandchildren. The thing is, my ambitions just weren't the same. I'm not that good at science. I can't stand the sight of blood and weddings. And children are the last thing on my mind. After all, I'm only 17. I haven't even decided if I like girls that much yet. So for now, I'm just hiding out here with Tabs, playing my guitar and using the money we make from busking to pay for a little bit of board and to keep me on the cheese pasties. When I'm a bit more settled and have a clearer plan, I'll probably get in touch with my family. Tab says the talent scout regularly walks past our pitch, so you never know, I could even be heading with a recording contract one day.
Sadie's story. The 27th of February. My name's Kerry Lancaster, and I'm a youth worker. I'm concerned about Sadie Maddocky, who attends East Leeds Academy. She's currently in Year 10, although I understand from her head of year that she doesn't really attend that regularly. I've met Sadie several times as part of our youth project. We've mostly chatted in bus shelters and in the park where I found her on her own or chatting with older men. Initially I met Sadie at around 9 o'clock at night, but recently I've seen her out as late as 2 in the morning. Sadie always says that she's fine and that she's waiting for or she's just seen her boyfriend. She's usually well dressed but wears revealing clothing and doesn't seem to have a coat appropriate for the weather. Sadie's been unwilling to tell me anything about her home or family situation. I've chatted to Sadie about our project and we've had a brief conversation about the age of consent and about alcohol consumption. On one occasion, Sadie appeared to have a bruise on her face, which she attributed to a drunken fall.
Jerome's dad initially reported him missing from home when he disappeared for 3 nights in a row last November. Prior to that, Jerome had repeatedly stayed away overnight, but Dad had never asked for help as Jerome always returned home sometime over the course of the next day. School reported that Jerome's attendance had dropped prior to Christmas and that he was at risk of underachieving in his GCSE exams. They describe him as a talented and intelligent young man, but explain that he often arrived in school without his uniform, smelling of cigarettes, and on one occasion, what they thought was weed. When I initially spoke to Dad, he explained that his relationship with Jerome had always been strained. He explained that Jerome's mum had recently remarried and that Jerome had only moved in with him because he did not like her new partner. Initially, Jerome had to sleep on a sofa, although more recently Dad states he's bought him a bed and put up a curtain to give him some privacy from the people sitting in the lounge. On one occasion, Dad admits he threw Jerome out because he had seen him in a stolen car. The incident was never reported and Dad is keen not to have the police involved. Likewise, Dad is angry that school has made a referral to social care and blames Jerome for what he views as an unnecessary intrusion into his life. Dad states that Jerome is not part of a gang but has a good set of friends who look out for him. Although Jerome has not returned home for over a week, he is convinced he'll return in his own time and definitely when he wants something.